Good evening. Welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Vic Ravenko. I'm the introducer or host or whatever you want to call it for this evening. And it's a pleasure for me to introduce our speaker today. Bill and I met about a year or so ago on a trip with some of you to South Africa. And if you want to find out what collaboration is about, go on a Commonwealth Club travel program sometime. It's a lot of fun. And I found out about Bill, and one thing led to another, and his interest in media and his expertise, and he agreed to speak at the club and maybe lead to other things like heading up a section of the Commonwealth Club on media matters. But we'll get to that later. Let me introduce him. He's got a background and went to the school at Wesleyan College and St. John's Law School, and he's been a chief executive officer for a long time with CBS and ESPN and Univision and multimedia. And he's also been the founding partner of MBG Media Investors, an equity firm investing in small media communication companies. And he's been an instructor at the New School University of New York. So he can see he's been around and as a chief executive. And when Bill and I got to talk about it, I thought he'd be a perfect speaker to talk about the future of traditional media news. And it's my pleasure, and please welcome Bill Grimes.
Thank you, Vic. It's very nice to see a number of people who are with us in Africa tonight, and I certainly appreciate your attendance and hope I can leave you with some thoughts about where I believe mostly traditional media is going. Victor didn't quite say it correctly in terms of him soliciting me. I kind of lobbied for this. I thought this would be a pretty good idea. It was 9 months ago, and what's happened that 9 months ago, not everybody knew that the traditional media business was really approaching apocryphal problems. But since then, as I've been preparing for this, every day there are three, four, five articles somewhere online or in traditional media, in media, about the declining fortunes of traditional media. And at first, my idea was to talk almost exclusively about the business of traditional media, how it can survive a transition to online. But as I got to think more of it, I became more concerned with the social ramifications of a society, ours, which does not have traditional, robust journalism news, traditional news organizations that provide us with the reporting and with the coverage of news events that are important to a free society. So with those kind of off-the-top-cuff comments, let me turn to my prepared text and deliver my thoughts on this. I begin by saying free societies need an independent and robust press to keep their citizens informed and enlightened. Trained and experienced journalists are needed to report with clarity and accuracy on the activities of governments, institutions, and businesses. Performing this vital service requires a large news organization, one with worldwide bureaus, trained reporters, professional editors who have the time and resources to cultivate local news sources and the motivation to report news honestly. As traditional media companies, newspapers in particular, which I'm going to focus mostly on tonight, continue to lose money in their operations, file for bankruptcy, and cease publishing, several questions arise. First, can these companies survive with an online content product only? Second, if so, I hope it's not here. Second question is, if so, what would the business model be for traditional news media as it moves to online only? No papers being produced. And the third question is whether or not we can expect the new media, online news sites with small staffs and consumer-generated information from bloggers and Twitters to replace the role of traditional, vigorous news reporting, the investigative role that the largest and the best traditional media news organizations have played in our society for many decades now? So the answer to the first question, I believe, is yes. Large news companies, which our society depends upon, can make the transition to online, but only if they discontinue printing the newspapers and also for many of the magazines. To the question of the business model, in other words, if they stop publishing newspapers and they have their online news sites only, how will the business model work? How will these companies afford to stay in business? The answer to that is that they will require subscriber revenues from their online readers to remain in business and produce the quality of news, commentary, and analysis that our company needs. The answer to the third question about whether the new news online content, smaller companies, the startup digital news content companies, will they have the resources to match the depth and the breadth of news journalism that we have enjoyed for many years? And I think the answer to that, the clue to that is if we look at what happened in recent weeks in Iran, where we saw blogs and tweets and cell phone photos from there. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. But they provide, in my opinion, little context and scant enlightenment of the complexities that fueled those events in Iran and little insight into what might happen next. There are many local news startups and online companies, and some will succeed, but it is unlikely that any will fill the role that the best traditional news organizations play in the in-depth reporting of international, national, and local events. And it is mainly to the survival of this handful of traditional news providers that I will speak this evening. The dwindling fortunes of traditional media, newspapers, magazines, and broadcast radio and television stations are well known to all now. Not a day passes without several articles, analyses, and opinions trumpeting the continuing decline of newspapers, audiences, and revenues. More than 100 newspapers and at least 36 magazines have closed doors in the last 12 months. We will see a number of radio stations, I think, which at one time were required to broadcast a minimum amount of news and public service, exiting the business of broadcasting and licensing their bandwidth spectrum for new wireless content and services. The culprit of traditional media's demise is mostly the internet, where everyone is a publisher, where content is free, and where the supply of advertising inventory is limitless. The recession has brought to light the fundamental flaws in traditional media's business models, but an economic return to prosperity will not save newspapers and will not save a lot of other traditional media. Now, while possibly overlooking one or two, I want to identify these most important large professional news gathering companies. They are, in my view, the New York Times Company, the Tribune Company, and the Washington Post Company, each of which owns a number of newspapers and free websites, and all of which are losing money on an operating basis today. Now, the business of newspapers is heavily dependent upon advertising revenues, which account for about 80% of their income or their revenue. The other 20% comes from circulation. When we buy the newspaper, or the newspapers in particular, or when we subscribe to it. Last year, businesses in our country spent $37 billion advertising in newspapers, down from $49 billion in 2005. So in 5 years, a massive loss of ad revenue for the newspaper industry. And consumer spending on purchasing advertising newspapers has now declined from about $15 billion then to $11 billion. So both circulation and ad revenue are in decline for traditional print newspapers. Despite efforts to reduce expenses by newspaper management, the legacy costs of printing and distribution cannot be overcome in today's world of digital publishing and diminishing ad revenues. The rapidly approaching end of newspapers in print form will, first of all, delight environmentalists, next, consumers of news because of better news, which I'm going to talk about on the websites that exist in the papers today, and finally, will delight shareholders because I believe I'm going to demonstrate how the newspaper online with subscriber fees will provide a greater return for all constituencies. The number of trees raised will decrease significantly. Consumers will get a better product, which I just said, and shareholders will begin to see an increase in their long-suffering holdings in traditional media stocks. Last year, the New York Times Company, this is a quick example, purchased 317,000 metric tons of newsprint at a cost of about $500 per ton. That's both a lot of trees and a lot of money. Now, to examine the financial realities of newspaper, I want to take you to a specific situation, which is the New York Times, which I'm going to cite information used from their 2008 annual report, public information. And I'm going to use the Times as kind of a proxy for newspapers and for traditional media. Even though the Times is unique and different, as we all know, it generates more revenues than any newspaper in America, possible exception of the Wall Street Journal. It has the second largest circulation, but it's also the most expensive newspaper to produce, and it suffers, importantly, the same business maladies of other daily newspapers and much traditional media. Now, here's the New York Times numbers, so you can think about this business and how I'm going to demonstrate why it just cannot survive in its current moment. Last year, the New York Times generated revenues of $1.6 billion. $1.6 billion was what they took in advertising and circulation revenue. The cost of operating the New York Times was just about the same amount of money, $1.6 billion. The profit was just about virtually zero. I'm rounding numbers a little bit, but it was the lowest amount of money the papers made in at least a decade. It made slightly under $100 million. Its share price of the company, for those interested in that, in 2005 was $52, and is now less than the price of the Sunday New York Times, which is $6 now. More importantly, in the first quarter of this year, January, February, March, the Times had a decline in revenue of 18%. The company reported a loss of $60 million. And it's my estimate, spending a lot of time with this, that the company will lose probably $200 million this year. Now, if this were only a cyclical recession-driven event, which a lot of people seem to think is a kind of nice way of saying things will get better soon, it might be reasonably expected that things will get better soon for newspaper and much of traditional media, but it won't happen. Newspapers' share of all U.S. advertising, it's getting a little complex, but follow it, newspapers' share of total advertising spent is 15%, down from 25% a decade ago. All advertising revenue spent in America, newspapers get 15%. But the problem is they're only receiving 5% of the time we spend with media. So 5% of our time is spent reading newspapers. Newspapers are getting 15% of ad revenue. And that can't continue. The dynamics of the business just will not permit that to continue. That's because, the gap between a media company, and this is from lots of experience, I think, the gap between a media company's share of ad dollars and its share of time spent, what we spent with it over time, is the reality that I believe the factor that newspaper ad revenues, regardless of an economic recovery, will continue to decline, because that gap finally, at some point in time, is narrowed. And importantly, I think that if the 15% of ad revenue, remember, I may not have mentioned, $37 billion was spent in advertising in newspapers in the United States. If that 15% declines to 10, which I think it will over the next 5 years, there'll be no daily newspapers printed in the United States, in my view. Now, compounding the newspaper's problem is that advertising revenue growth in the United States over the next 5 years is expected to be negligible. The Kelsey Group, a well-respected media research firm specializing in forecasting advertising expenditures, released estimates last month that local advertising in the United States will decrease from $155 billion last year to $144 in 2013. This has never happened in the history of media, that ad revenues have declined for more than two consecutive years. Now we have an outlook that's saying they're going to be less in 5 years than they are today. New York media private equity and research firm of Verona, Sulliard & Stevenson, a well-respected firm in media, is estimated at mid-year 2008, last year, mid-year, before this recession, before things got worse, that newspaper ad revenues will decline in each of the next 5 years, similar to the Kelsey thing. But not incidentally and importantly in a moment, over the same period, ad revenues for online content is estimated to double, and nascent mobile ad revenues to nearly triple. So while things are slowing down and for traditional media, losing share, new media, I call internet new media, and mobile content supported by advertising will vigorously increase. Now, two other related issues will adversely affect traditional media ad revenues. The first is that the millions of websites in which advertising can be placed will exert a continuing downward pressure on the unit cost of all advertising in all media. The supply of increased advertising inventory, the number of available units of advertising throughout all media, which began to grow a lot in the early 80s with cable television, has now exploded with all these millions of internet sites. And as any first-year economic student knows, when supply exceeds demand, lower per unit prices will follow. And that's what the media business is facing today. The second developing reality that may dampen the future growth of traditional media and newspaper ad revenue is that new media, internet and mobile, with greater ability to measure advertising's impact on consumers with click-through counts, search results, and even direct purchases in some cases, is creating greater cost efficiencies for advertisers. That means for many advertising companies, it's becoming easier to generate the same advertising goals, reaching a bunch of people, reaching a lot of them with great frequency, and often knowing who the customer is, that this will continue, that this may well result in lower expenditures from a lot of ad companies because of the fact that the advertising spent now is more effectively measured. The famous quote from John Wanamaker, the legendary Philadelphia retailer of half a century ago, was, "Half my advertising budget is wasted, but I don't know which half." Doesn't ring so true today anymore. New and improved ad measurement tools are providing advertisers with more accurate return on investment information. So the summary, the first major point here, is that until 30 years ago, traditional media companies benefited from a minimum of competition and relied comfortably on ever increasing advertising expenditures. Those halcyon days are over, and the demise of traditional media and print will ramp up. Now, many observers and concerned citizens are offering ideas to save these large daily newspapers, and new capital is being invested in new online news-gathering startup companies. Good stuff. Writing in the May issue of the Commonwealth Club, President Patricia Duffy summarized several ownership possibilities and ways to fund news. Quote, "Active consideration has been taking place in the philanthropic community about what donors can do to help provide media capabilities to inform the public about important social issues." Adding that suggestions to turn newspapers into a non-profit corporations, no pun did she intend, has also been taking place, she said. And she hinted that tax dollars and individual and foundation donors could help shoulder the burden, correctly pointing out that this model is working well in the public news broadcasting sphere. Others have echoed Ms. Duffy's calls for different ownership schemes. A recent article in Forbes was titled, "Why Can't the Ford Foundation Buy the New York Times?" In The Nation magazine, an article suggested that the government give all Americans an annual tax credit of $200, the first $200 that they spend on newspapers. Now, can the bailouts keep on coming? I don't know. More market-driven and privately financed ideas regarding what might supplant newspapers occurred in the June issue of San Francisco Magazine, which many of you may have seen. Lengthy article with the optimistic title, "Newspapers Are Dead, Long Live Journalism." Nina Martin writes that, quote, "Online journalists will produce good journalism, maybe even great journalism, on the real cheap. Money," she said, "isn't what drives good journalism." Maybe so, but this Monday, 2 days ago, after initially spurning the company's offer for continued employment in return for lower wages, the news employees at the Boston Globe voted to accept the company deal and return to work. Can news sites like the Huffington Post continue to publish hundreds of blogs daily without paying the creators, the contributors? Maybe, but I believe that when many of these writers, contributors to sites like the Huffington Post, think about the money that the site's founders are pocketing from ad revenues, they may have a change of heart. Continuing, Ms. Martin breathlessly reports that Spot.us, San Francisco-based website, will pitch stories to prospective readers who will kick in $10 to $15. Well, that makes a few hundred dollars a year for the New York Times site seem pretty good bargain to me. Private equity and venture capital efforts to support new startups are cited in this article, including Valley Financiers, Warren Hellman, and Oakland's Herb and Marion Sandler, who have promised $10 million a year for the new investigative site in Oakland, ProPublica. Good stuff. In this month's Vanity Fair, media guru Michael Wolff writes that the Washington-based Politico, site that I really haven't visited yet, is becoming, quote, a one-stop source for Washington news. It is not like political news has ever been, an internet-focused mix of trade journal, Twitter feed, and quite literally a real-time chat with the senior most newsmakers and leakers. Well, perhaps this is a glimpse of a successful news niche content business of the future with a mix of journalists and consumer-generated news and information. But in closing, Wolf confesses that Politico, which was launched in 2007, with now 6.7 million unique visitors to its site, still, and I'm quoting, cannot support its staff of 100 on the low internet advertising rates. It's likely that a number of such local and niche online services will be successful in providing us with new and valuable content, but none will be a replacement for the breadth and the depth of news that major newspaper companies produce, the kind of information, the kind of news upon which free nations thrive. Now to the issue. So then what to do about this? How might this work? How can we save the papers? So I will argue that there are three things that newspaper companies, large news, traditional news gathering organizations, at least the three of which I meant, must do. First, as I mentioned, they must very soon discontinue printing the newspaper and say goodbye to the crushing cost associated with production and distribution. You just think about trucks driving all around America delivering New York Times. You'll hear the numbers in a moment on that. Second thing they must do is they must improve the quantity and quality of the news content in the websites. It's got to be a lot better than it is, and I'm going to think I can show you how I think that will work. And the third is they have to charge us a fee to receive this content, the news. Three things. Now, I'm going to try to illustrate for you how this business model for online-only news content would work. I'll return to the New York Times to quickly examine the financial impact that the changes I just mentioned, no more newspaper, better online news content, and charging fees, how the New York Times financials might look if this were successfully implemented. Now, my first assumption, there are four of them, and I'll that I want to speak clearly on because it's important to I think, to follow this. My first assumption is advertising revenues for the New York Times newspaper would decrease from $1 billion last year to $350 million. Decrease. Because the advertising online, as we know, is cheaper, less valuable. The New York Times now, today, has $150 million of advertising on its website. But total ad revenues, New York Times, after we stop publishing, decreases by $650 million. Subscription revenues would increase from today, $600 million. That's how much we pay to get the New York Times in its print form. No charge online. Subscription revenues would increase $100 million to $70 million. The key assumption here is that 5% of the New York Times' 20 million unique visitors a month, 5%, will pay $100 a year to receive the New York Times online. Again, the assumption here is this content is protected, not distributed, not redistributed. Second assumption, third assumption, is that the printing and newspaper distribution expenses of $350 million would be eliminated. The fourth is that, if I were doing this, spend another $100 million, a 25% increase, on making the Times website better. I think it's the best website now, but a lot more could be done. That's an investment that these numbers assume. And finally, a terrible cost of large company newspapers is the SG&A, the cost of corporate overhead, so many lawyers, so many accountants, so many corporate management levels. And in the New York Times case, it's $750 million a year to fund the corporate overhead in my example here, my model. That would be reduced about half. Now, when you do all the math on it, which I'm not going to take you through, the bottom line is, if this model worked, the New York Times would break even in its first supposed year of this new model. No more publishing newspapers, subscription fees, and a better online content. So now the question everybody's asking, yeah, but who in the world's going to pay for this? This stuff's all free. I'm not paying for it. Yep, okay. Well, let's think about that. In 1981, when I arrived at ESPN, there were less than 20 million U.S. households subscribing to cable television, and they were paying $100 a year, $100 a year, about $8 a month. Well, today, 92 million subscribers pay for satellite-delivered and cable television programming. $800 a year per household is the average what we're spending on television programming now, $800. That excludes any internet high-speed access or telephony. Now, the quantity and the quality of the programming on television, you could argue, has increased immensely since. But here's the key. The New York Times and newspapers don't need 90 million people paying. They need about 2 million paying. The Times and the Chronicle, I would guess off the top of my head, could survive nicely if a quarter of a million people were paying $100 a month for it, which is another story. Now, Another reason I believe people pay, and this I bet will surprise some and surprise me, and is that last year, 2.5 million people paid over $1 billion to get People Magazine. People Magazine, now just think about it. People Magazine generated three times the circulation revenue as the New York Times did, 20 times what people paid for the Chronicle. And this is not to denigrate the quality of People Magazine, but it is to suggest a value of a newspaper 24/7 by 352 days a year versus 52 copies a week, a year, 52 copies of People. $1 billion is being spent on People Magazine. And then finally, as many of you know who subscribe to the Wall Street Journal now online, they have now over 1 million people paying $105 a month to receive their content. So, yeah, these are apples to oranges, orange comparisons, but we only know pretty soon when the newspapers are forced, the news content organizations are forced to try it. Now, I mentioned the improvement of the quantity and the quality, and I'm going to move ahead. You know, I'm going to get to three personal examples that make me viscerally feel that great news content, and I'm going to refer to three examples in the New York Times, is worth money. The first is I was visiting a pal back in New York a few weeks ago, and he was telling me about how his great-grandfather traveled throughout Tennessee in the 1880s and consolidated, bought a lot of banks, created a regional banking company. And he said, let me show you. And he went to the New York Times online archives, and within 30 seconds, I read the article from 1888 online. Pretty neat stuff if you think about it. I don't think a lot of people are thinking about this stuff yet, but I believe they will. A second quick anecdote is a couple years ago, I was returning from Manhattan. I was out on Long Island for a weekend, and I was returning on a jitney bus. I was reading my Times, and a woman came in, sat down next to me, and she started nervously looking at me as I was reading my Times. I thought maybe she was ill or something, and I asked her if she was okay. She says, "Oh," she says, "no, sir, I'm very, very sorry." She said, "I rushed out of the door to catch this bus, and I left my Times on the dining room table. I can't get through Wednesdays without reading the Home and Garden section of the New York Times." You know, it's a funny story, but I think it suggests that there are people who will pay a premium for good content. And finally, in Monday's column, Frank Rich's column, about Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor, there were 29 in this article, one column by Frank Rich, 29 blue-colored hyperlinks to take you to different names, places, events in this article. To think of this value compared to reading that article in the New York Times, to me, is overwhelming. 29 clicks to read to if you want to drill down and get more information, existing now, free of charge, on the New York Times. Now, the point of these three examples is that today the online content provides a much richer experience today than newspapers do, and with the addition of more reporters, bloggers, aggregation partners, all this great stuff, the newspapers can and will afford to produce a better product online than they have we've been accustomed to seeing in the print. And I'll quickly pass by this, but the ubiquity, the growing ubiquity of e-readers and the Kindle and the PlastiLogic's new products just mean that there's a greater opportunity coming for people to get this stuff, get this great good news, good quality news information wherever they are, and that they will pay for it. Now, here's a little thing. I thought, this is kind of striking. I'm not used to thinking this way. But I thought, let me show you how it might work for me. You know, here I am at this stage of life, and I'm saying, all this stuff, I get up every morning, I read 5, 6, 7 newspapers, it's all gone, I got to pay for it. What would I do, I wonder? Well, here's what my life might be like. First of all, I pay a couple hundred dollars a year for a national news content organization, an international, national, local, great news content, like the Times, maybe the Los Angeles Times, maybe the Washington Post. I subscribe to one of those, $200, quickly. Then I'm citizens of San Francisco now, and I'd spend $100 a year for an improved Chronicle. It's not bad now. I don't think it's bad as a lot of people say. But that website, now think better, more stuff, more coverage. That's worth $100. Now, because I'm also interested in technology, I would subscribe to the San Jose Mercury. I bet you I would happily pay $50 a year to get their content. And who knows, in my neighborhood west of here, I may pay $20 or $30 a year for weekly content updating what's happening in my neighborhood. And because I sometimes miss my hometown back in West Virginia, I'd subscribe to my local newspaper where I grew up. I'd pay them $50 a year just to find out maybe who else is dying and who's getting divorced and who's getting arrested. So I think that I would do that. So you start thinking about this and you say, gee, we're up to maybe $500-$600 a year for stuff I get free. Well, a lot less than we're paying for television, but I will now post my next to last and perhaps Panglossian notion that we may not even notice the difference of several hundred dollars being spent on content we now get free. And here's why. First is that the real costs for many products have decreased over the years. Food, the cost of food during my lifetime has fallen from 19% of household expenditures to under 10. That's in my lifetime, 9 whole points, a lot of money. And real money, that's that we're spending a lot less money now than we did on food. The cost of telephony and computers, as you all know, has fallen rapidly. Less expensive cars are coming. Report yesterday on in the news on in India, we now have a $2,000 car that's being, and of course the cost, hopefully, fingers crossed, that we can do something about energy. The idea here is that we may well have enough household savings to easily afford valuable content that is not available free of charge online. And a second Penglossian thought is that because advertisers are able to measure the effectiveness of their advertising better, they might begin to spend less money on advertisers and pass along some of the savings to us in the price of goods that we purchase. And this reminds me of an important point. Content has never been free. We pay for it every time we buy an advertised product. So, in closing, we stand here at this inflection point with much of traditional media facing uncertainty and even abyss. Serving this week as a metaphor of the end of traditional media history was Walter Cronkite's passing, at least for me. I recall the evenings when I joined 40% of American households and watching his evening news, and I also wistfully remember a long time ago days in the early childhood when after dinner we gathered around the console radio to listen to the news of the day, and I would awaken in the morning and skip out to the doorstep to pick up the morning newspaper. These are but quaint memories now, but the need for vigorous, independent news organizations is not a quaint thought. In an increasingly complex world, robust reporting is more important than ever. And the time for traditional news organizations to make substantial changes to save their business is now. Tomorrow is here. Where many media pundits see the demise of newspapers and other traditional media, I see a stronger, more robust fourth estate with serious journalists, imaginative technologists, and a competent management teaming together to produce sparkling, a term I used to use in television. If I saw something I thought was really good, it was sparkling. To produce sparkling news content, the likes that we have not yet seen online. And I'm reminded of the moment in 1983 when at a cable television convention, someone in the audience heaped praises upon the wonder of a new cable network called MTV. Its president was sitting next to me. He leaped to his feet and he roared, "You ain't seen nothing yet." Nor perhaps have we. Thank you very much.
Is this on?
I can hear without a mic if anybody wants to. Anybody has a question?
Can you please use this because he'd like to
Thank you, Bill. Question is this. Presumably you, your good self, or others are making the same kind of recommendations to the senior management of the three international news orgs that you spoke of. What's the general sense of how they're receiving the kind of advice that you suggested this evening?
Well, the Tribune Company, which I mentioned, as we know, is in bankruptcy, bought highly leveraged by a Chicago firm. So they're looking for a new corporate structure, and I don't know what the management of that will do. I don't know what to think of. The Washington Post Company is, by the way, has discontinued the printing of its business section. They're out of the business news section, which I believe has been announced. And I don't know what they'll do, but Warren Buffett, as you probably know, is a director of the Washington Post Company, and he said on CNBC a couple weeks ago that the business model of the New York Times, he said, not the Washington Post, but the business model of the New York Times of charging $2 a day and giving it all away free online is unsustainable. So I suggest that we'll see the Washington Post Company moving soon to something like that I've spoken. New York Times is another tricky issue because, as you probably know, the family founding family, the Salzburgers, control the voting. The company will, I'm highly confident, lose $200 million this year. They got a whole lot of debt. They're in trouble. I believe, in fact, I was kind of anxious. I was worried that I'd give this talk today, and I would read this morning that the New York Times is charging for its content. But it hasn't happened yet. So that's, I think that they're all listening. But it can't continue. Well, it just can't. No one's going to pay for it.
Actually, I do pay for the New York Times.
Yes, a lot of people.
Yeah, and on no, but I do. I on newsstand.com. I mean, I pay $90 a year for the New York Times. It's exactly the same thing. That's in the. I don't know either. I just looked up New. Yeah, I mean. It is. So I mean, when I looked on there, it's $90 a year. It's the exact same thing as the paper. I used to have the paper. I get it. You choose, you know, Monday through Friday or whatever. I love it.
May I ask you why you're paying $90 to newsstand.com?
Because I get
for something you could get free. You get extra stuff from the Times?
No, I get the entire newspaper. If I did it for free, you just get bits and pieces of it.
Okay. All right. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. But I do know. I do sense one thing. That site, newsstand.com, is taking a bunch of that money that should go to the people creating the content, which is the New York Times Company. I think. You know, you agree? Yes. Hi. Yeah.
Hi. You've mentioned these three, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Tribune Company as the three kind of major newspaper
news organizations. Big news
organizations.
Yeah, I did. And I may have overlooked one or two. Yes, I did.
Yeah, and I definitely would agree with you that they're, you know, very important, but we all know that it's hard to turn around a big ship. And when you mentioned the three steps that newspapers need to take, such as stopping their print organizations, I thought of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which did that already. And so I'm just curious as to what your idea is of the idea of decentralization of, you know, will the New York Times still be the big important person, or could the Toledo Blade come out and be, you know, the center of national news because they're able to be more nimble and turn around more quickly?
Well, being the center of national news.
Not necessarily the Toledo Blade, but but something like the Seattle PI or, you know, just
because
they've been stalling.
It costs a lot of money. You heard the New York Times, $1.6 billion. Okay, 750 is half of it is corporate stuff, but it costs a lot of money to have news bureaus and editors and professional writers. I think it's going to take a big organization. I didn't mention the three network news organizations also, which are financially troubled, broadcast networks. You know, they also are a player in this and could create and work with other newspapers. But I think what we'll see is like a few companies who are with news bureaus around the world producing all this world. We know we have the AP or UPI or Reuters now. Just doing a lot. But I think we'll see an aggregation or conglomeration maybe of them. But I hope for the Toledo Blade or whatever it is, I hope that they can generate enough money to make local Toledo news better and greater and more vibrant than what probably exists in their paper.
You said that the in the print media, about 80%, I think, something like that, of the revenue is from advertising. And you seem to, maybe I misunderstood.
Newspapers.
Maybe I misunderstood or I seem to miss it, but why do you sort of downgrade the importance of advertising in the online service? You say they would be depending primarily on subscribers, and why not advertising online, even if the per-unit advertising is cheaper?
I hope I didn't denigrate it, because today the New York Times, of their $1 billion in advertising, 150 million is from the website. And what I'm assuming is when that newspaper goes away, another 100 million will migrate from the print to the website. So I don't mean to denigrate. The problem now, and I think it's going to be a long term problem, is the unit cost is so low because we have this plethora of advertising inventory. So I didn't mean to denigrate it. But importantly, and I think I made this point, over the next 5 years, online advertising revenue in America is supposed to double, And mobile online advertising is going to grow dramatically, too. The New York Times and content providers should get an increasing share of that expenditure, I think, because they have valuable content.
Hi. Thanks, William. I'm Stephen Ekman. I founded a mobile media company here, Planet, and we're taking mobile content to the consumer. And wanted to ask you about, you know, these large companies are big ships to turn, and how likely do you see that they'll actually be able to navigate the new sea, or will they just become brands that go into bankruptcy that then sell themselves off to the smaller funded companies that don't have all that debt?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. Probably a little bit of both, but I'm confident of one thing. Their management must be people like you, and not guys that have been sitting around reading newspapers for 200 years. That's what they need. Management's a key element of turning the ship around.
I actually have a question about what I feel is probably the fundamental problem around traditional media not succeeding. I guess it's not necessarily about information being cheap, but the fact that good information is also cheap. I know you mentioned about subscription models, but if you look at when I was growing up, Britannica was probably the best source of an encyclopedia out there. But Wikipedia has been out there for a while, and it's not only really good quality content, it also happens to be free. So I think that is one fundamental issue I see with any traditional media trying to get on to the approach of information. So that's one thing I wanted to get your feedback on. And the other question
I can't do two, can I try to address that first?
Sure.
I think it's a very, very, very valid point, but I think the difference between those who are providing information for an encyclopedia, like Wikipedia, or something, I think that information is fairly accurate and fairly known. Reporting news requires local contacts. It requires sourcing. It requires a lot of contextual time and energy spent that I don't think, and I think that is the difference, quickly.
Actually, that bleeds into my next question. That was about, I think the other fundamental problem is the media, I don't want to use it in a negative way, but I think there's a media bureaucracy which makes things really slow. So if you think about new models around information like Twitter, or even just any blogging site out there, there are people in, let's say, Pakistan from a small city telling you about what's happening down on the ground. Yep. How do you think that is different from a media corporation out there giving news probably a lot later, but something in case of Twitter being a lot more timely and probably more accurate if it's coming from a bunch of other resources?
Well, as I said, and I agree, what I said in my comment about Iran in the last couple of weeks, that the Twitters, the bloggers, the cell phone, it's tremendous stuff, but it doesn't tell us really what's happening there. I mean, it doesn't say why. I mean, there's the depth of reporting and information. That serious, you know, but people who want to dig deeper into the news, know more about what's going on, I think won't be able to get from a whole lot of people showing pictures and tweeting, and I just saw this. So that's why I think there's value. Now, remember, importantly, these news organizations don't need 10, 20, 30 million people paying them. They need 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. So this is the model that I think the value differential in their content will be worth the expenditure to a lot of people. So I think.
I work for a sports magazine in ad sales, so I'd be curious to see what you think about how this model might influence magazines going forward.
Well, you know, magazines are magazines have a higher percentage of circulation of people paying for the newspapers. And I don't know. You know, we just saw Condé Nast close what I thought was a pretty good business publication. What was the name of that?
Portfolio.
Just closed. Disappointing. And, you know, there's a company with tremendous resources. Okay, so, you know, okay, great. So I don't know, but I do think that magazines' share of ad expenditures is going to decrease, too. Now, when I say that, I mean the print content. I'm not talking about what may happen online where we'll see big advertising growth.
Bill, some of the models that are used now in the media, like I'm thinking Google, is completely free, and has enormous advertising revenues. Do you think it's possible that newspapers could get into that kind of a position? I mean, is it just because they don't have enough readership?
Well, you know, if I could be wrong, some people can correct me on this, but most of Google's advertising comes from search, which is a very special and differentiated, right? You're in kind of a new way of advertising. It's not coming a lot from traditional ad budgets, Google, but Google's obviously tremendous success. But a lot of that is coming from the search, not from the content of Google, and that's a great business. And whether somebody else is, you know, I just saw Microsoft's new product. What's it called? Blink or something? Bing. Yeah. So there'll be a lot of people trying to get into it. But I have to distinguish in my mind, I think importantly, that Google's fundamental value is coming from providing search. Just Sharon would know. And not from the content and what I call traditional advertising.
Yes, my interest is in the relative nature of the one direction of newspaper. When I was a kid, my parents said television's no good because you just sit there and get mesmerized. Well, to some extent, a newspaper is like that too. I think the digital revolution is providing multimedia. It's not Twitter versus reading something. It's watching an interview. That's why people are paying for subscriptions to TV. It's interactional. You can get on your cell phone and ask them a question, and some of those questions will get answered. A newspaper is never going to do that.
I think it's a great point, and something actually I overlooked in saying. Here's my way I would express that and the way I think about that. You know, for a long time, we just had print. Then radio came, you know, sound. Then we got TV, moving pictures. This internet is the first, let's call it a medium, that has text, audio, video, the ability to search and archive. It's overwhelmingly powerful, I think, for virtually any kind of new content, information, whatever. Is that, I agree with, yeah. Yep, too bad. Yep.
Other questions?
Hi. I would respectfully say wrong question. It isn't about newspapers, it's about news. And there's no reason why the New York Times can't be just as active in electronic form as they are in print form.
Great.
Back to you, good sir.
Yep.
I take it by inference. I don't want to drag people through the numbers, but I was really stunned by one thing you said. I assumed in your $750 million worth of overheads at the Times, that did not include the desks and staff of producing the information, right?
No, the cost of creating the New York Times, which I didn't specifically mention, the writing, the editing, the news bureaus is $350 million.
Of the 750?
$350 to produce it, distribute it, $350 to write it, create it, and another $750 million to have all of the associated, the allocated corporate overhead and all the PR and all of the other activities. Mm. It seems like a lot of money, but the way I got to it is I took the corporate overhead of the company, SG&A basically, and I attributed 65% of it to the New York Times newspaper because the New York Times newspaper creates 65% of the company's revenues. Is the way I calculate that.
Do you know any other businesses that would get away with that kind of overhead structure?
A business that's controlled by the family and the share.
How much
the
do they want?
What?
How much do they want to
it's
sell
not
it?
Yeah, it'd be nice to buy it, wouldn't it? It'd be fun. Yeah.
Well, something's going to have to give.
Yes, it is.
If they're going to try to run
very
the company
soon.
The way they have been.
Well, you know, something's going to. Yep.
Other questions?
Well, I completely like what you said, especially the value of linking through, so just you could cover so much more ground online. But I'm of the remnant that I work at the computer all day. I'm a writer and art director, so this relates to me on a number of levels. But just as far as I use the paper to relax. And, you know, I don't want to turn the computer on in the morning until I'm ready to work. There's got to be some other people like me who want the morning paper. And then when you commute, hopefully commuting is going to be on the rise with our environmental issues. And, you know, I don't want a handheld device. I want to read a real paper. So there's got to be more of me out there.
I don't know how to, maybe, but, you know, the new plastic logic reader is going to be 8.5 by 11, and you can facility fold up it in your pocket. Maybe you'll learn to read it that way, Bruce. Yeah.
I don't think this is about this particular audience and how we consume media, because this audience, let's face it, is
dying. I mean, when you think about it, the average age in this room is over 50, probably. And that's not where growth is coming from in the media marketplace. But you have to take back and look and say, okay, well, how are 15-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds today consuming media, and how is that going to influence the total outcome 10 years from now? What are they going to be looking at? And I agree with your point. I mean, I want to turn the screen off. I don't want to be looking at that computer screen. But at the same time, you know, if there's no alternative, what are you going to do?
I have my own little one-man operation. I use the internet for marketing, but I make the money selling hard copy books and a hard copy newsletter. People like it. They recommend to their friends, you should buy this book. If I give people digital copies, they say, friend, let me email it to you. I will be glad to do e-books and digital newsletters when I can stop them from giving it away free, so I only sell one copy. Is there an electronic mechanism with the New York Times or Wall Street or whoever that effectively accomplishes that?
Well, first of all, I don't know that, but I've thought about it, and it seems to me that there's enough upside for the smart technology people out here to figure better ways to protect content. But I don't know. My thesis depends upon not copying and forwarding the content.
If I just
yep.
We already went through that battle of protecting content throughout the 90s and early 2000s with the internet music battle. And if there's any canary in the coal mine,
If there's any kind of canary in the coal mine you can look at from the traditional media world, and an example of how not to do it, it's the music industry, who used to be a $49 billion industry. They're now about an $18 billion industry. And their first reaction was, people want to access music on the internet, so let's lock it up and protect it. And immediately everybody started stealing music. And, you know, at this point there's generations of kids who will probably never buy music. So, you know, I think there's some good examples and good case studies there that, you know, they've already gone through and yep. screwed up on that the newspaper guys should really look at. Because ultimately it's not really the internet that's the culprit. It's your audience and your customers whose behavior is changing. And in that instance, and I think in the newspaper instance as well, you have an audience and a customer base whose behavior is changing faster than you can change your business. And at the end of the day, you've got to make them happy. It doesn't matter if you own trucks or newsstands or anything like that. So
it's a very good point. I would only say that making a customer happy is sustainable only if your shareholders are happy. So somehow, you know, the giving it away, you know, one of the differences in music and news, traditional media, is that you know, the consumer, the end user, paid for music, whether they go to the old CD stores and buy it. Here you have these big news organizations are just so dependent upon advertising that you know, giving it away free or learning from what the recorded music business went through. I don't know enough about technologically, but it has to happen, or we're going to not have the product.
Two things. On the issue of not wanting to open up a computer and curl up with a computer to read the newspaper while you're having breakfast, I love reading newspaper breakfast. Kindle may be an intermediate sort of thing, and even beyond that, they're coming up with flexible plastic that you can put media on. The other thing, though, the key question, this point this man made here about, you know, the 18 to 20-year-olds, what are they going to want to look for? Then your whole premise is about the depth, the breadth, the quality of the news, the analysis, and so on, with the context that you get from it. Well, an 18 to 20-year-old, you almost have to be trained or inculcated to want that.
Yeah, I'm assuming, in this little New York Times scenario, there ain't no 24-year-olds looking at it. You know, America is getting a lot older. You know, 50% of our population will be over 50 sooner, is approaching it. And I'm assuming that there are enough oldies like us or to pay for that. It's important to figure out what the tastes of these and how the younger people are using consumers. But this model to save robust news, what I call it, is not dependent upon any kids or anybody really young. And I don't know how to program to them, but I know. I don't know, but when you take something away from people they value, I find my experience is they pay for it. But how, I don't know. So the lady there has been waiting. I know. Okay.
I want to proceed on the point of the similarity with the music and so forth. I'm a paper subscriber to the Times, and we went through a period that maybe some of you in the audience will recall when they provided online the opinion pages and certain special valued pages only to paper subscribers. So this was a version of charging for online information.
Yep.
And it crashed.
Yep.
It did not last.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why, but I think that's a bad omen.
Well, I think it was a very poor management decision the way they presented. They gave you only their columnists. They charged, I forget, you remember, Jeff? It was
free now. This piece is free, but everything else.
Yeah, I can't remember all the specifics. I can, but you know, we're dealing with a mistake on management's part, I think. And but I believe that they got about 300,000 people. I could be wrong. Was that about $50 for that stuff for a year or something? But what was it? You did. You couldn't get it. That's how yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you're,
because Murdoch first said, we're going to give this away free. And he had about $750,000 people paying $60 a year. Now he's got a million paying $100 a year. So that's it.
Good discussion, by the way. Thanks to Bill Grimes.
Thank you.